Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 1039 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here. More importantly, Neil Golden each and every week gives us his take on the financial markets and the economy and much of everything else. He's a stock chart reader, and he does it as well as anyone, and he explains this chaos, what sounds like chaos to me and to many others, in a very, very understandable way, and we always appreciate him being here. Neil Golden, how are you?
Very good, Frank. I hope you're doing well today.
I am, and we spoke a little off mic about the jobs report, and you said don't get too excited, right? Well, tell everybody what you said.
And since this morning, when the market opened up, I think it did open up for the Dow Jones at least 40 points higher. But looking at it now, it's below 40, around 25 or so, and for a second or two, it went negative. But today could end up in an up day. But the only thing sure about it, I think, is that come next week, the Federal Reserve will be likely to raise the interest rates. And I say that's a sure thing. So that's the next thing to look forward to, which is happening next week.
What does that do? I mean, explain to us what raising the interest rates does just in general.
Well, in general, my understanding, when banks borrow money from the Federal Reserve at the current rate, they pay like zero interest, and then they turn around and try to charge their customers interest when they borrow money from the banks. But in general, banks aren't making home loans anymore at this point, so there won't be anything like that. And the other positive thing is that people that have savings accounts could be earning maybe a fraction of a point more on their savings. So with interest rates going up, it has its good points, and it also helps maybe the bond market when public works like cities and stuff have to float bonds to, build schools or roads or whatever. The people who buy these municipal or treasury bonds or whatever can get a certain amount of interest for their investment.
Now, last time we spoke on last week's show, we spoke about highs and lows, high and low, and hopefully this week you can kind of explain more and certainly how it affects the housing market and how it pertains to housing.
I remember talking about it, and I really didn't come to a conclusion when it came to housing at the moment, whether or not the price that we're paying is high or low. I just know in general, prices of houses after employment goes up and everyone's making a lot of money, those also seem to go up, depending on what the interest rate is. People have to buy or borrow money to pay for housing. But it's an interesting concept that developed over years. I remember reading about a New York newspaper editor named Horace Greeley. And in 1860, he was telling people, he said, go west, young man.
Yep.
And then he finished the sentence and said, grow with the country and become rich. But what he was actually telling people to do was to go west, and I guess this is anything past the state of Ohio, and buy large tracts of land. And then as the cities would grow, sell this land off in small parcels and make a lot of money. So this is probably, as far as I know, it's one of the oldest formulas for becoming rich. About the only person I ever knew that did this was maybe Bob Holt, who used to take the money he did or made from movies and buy tracts of land in Southern California. But by the time he died, he was one of the richest people in California. That's mainly because the cities had grown so much and had run into the land that he had bought, and I guess he sold it to the cities or whatever. What this brings me to is, I guess it was in the 1950s when General Eisenhower was president of the United States. He gets the credit for putting together the United States highway system. He had noticed that when he was in Germany that the German Autobahn was a good idea in the sense that that helped the Germans move troops and supplies all across the country in a very orderly fashion. So when he was president, he put together our highway system. And originally it was made just for trucks to go from, you know, East Coast to West Coast in a timely manner. But this is also, I feel, the beginning of the suburbs, starting in 1960, when people noticed that they didn't have to live so close to where they work. And so therefore they started to move to maybe the surrounding cities. And the commute became longer and longer. And now, at least where I live, you know, it's a nightmare as far as rush hour traffic goes in the morning and in the evening. And actually the streets in the city that I live were never built to handle this amount of traffic. But that's what's happening. And the thing that I'm noticing is that a lot of young people who grew up in the suburbs now are trying to move back to the cities.
That's interesting.
In the sense that they don't want to live in the suburbs where they're so far away from, you know, the symphonies, the operas, the movies, and the museums and other things of, you know, that connotate culture that you would find in the cities. So at any expense, you know, they move to the cities, and if they're in high tech, you know, they're able to afford housing in a nice place. And what this is doing, and this is, seems to be a trend, I'd say in the future, you know, older people and poor people will have to leave the cities, and cities will mainly be occupied by young people.
Wow, and that's a great outlook on, or a great, but a reasonable outlook on what we may be looking at in the future. Very interesting. The whole point you're making there. Frank McKay here, but more importantly, Neil Golden is our very special guest each and every week, and we're talking about not only the stock market, but we're talking about the financial world and how it affects the world around us. Frank McKay with Neil Golden. Neil, a lot of interesting things that you said in there, but one of the things that stands out is, you know, I happen to live on a place in a place called Long Island in New York, and I noticed on some recent articles that were listed as number two as far as the most expensive places to live, you know, in Nassau and Suffolk County, and you know, it's the suburbs of New York City. And you brought up a very interesting point. You said when when people first started the highways, or when the highways first started developing, it made a commute manageable at that point. And you don't have to, because of the mode of travel, you don't have to live around the corner from where you work. Now, the city, strangely enough, Manhattan, it's cheaper to live, according to this, you know, a couple of these things, it's closer to, it's cheaper to live in Manhattan than it is out on the island. And I found that to be very surprising, but they give us a reason, transportation cost. That, you know, you could walk, you can take a cab, you could take a, you know, a short cab ride, or you could take a train ride to work, and it's much more manageable in the city. I mean, how much do you think that will play in deciding in the future who lives there and who doesn't?
The cost of transportation and getting to work?
Well, yeah.
I only can comment on where I live in the sense that we have something called rapid transit. It's supposed to go through approximately, you know, 7 or 8 counties. But in a sense, this system, which was started in the 60s, is now, you know, over 50 years older, and they need new cars and they need new equipment, and they're drastically raising their prices. You know, people have to, you know, drive to a certain part and pay for parking and then pay another high price to take a train to commute. But that's how bad it has become. And it's a major part, you know, getting to work every day, the cost of transportation, because it's not subsidized by the state or the federal government or anything else. And these workers that work for transit systems seem to make a lot more money, at least a lot more than bus drivers. So, but keeping the, you know, equipment into proper conditioning and the safety factors, and this, it's quite expensive in the future. So if you can live, you know, in the suburbs now and you can afford it and you have, you know, grocery stores and other things and clothing stores that you need to go to, you know, fine and dandy. But like I said, and what it's turning to, at least where I'm living, poor people and older people are being forced out.
Very interesting.
Of the cities.
Yeah, no, very interesting. Yeah. And the other thing that stands out that you said is that the, you know, although the highway systems and the road systems was set up for people to, you know, to get to and fro and, you know, usually originally for trips, but they didn't anticipate the amount of traffic that would come. And that's a very good point. And I don't know where that puts us, you know, what that does. I guess we have to adjust the government, the municipalities, us as a people have to kind of adjust those things. I mean, what are we looking at in the future? More mass transport, and I know it's just an opinion here, but do you expect the mass transportation system to enlarge, to improve? Because we really didn't expect to have this many cars on the road.
Well, definitely. There seems to be a trend that, you know, some people can work from home. You know, that's taking on large because of prominence because of the internet. You know, some people can do that and maybe go in to work or report in, you know, once a week or once a month. I think Google has a part like that, or people go and they'll work overtime at Google and then they'll take 3 weeks off and go home and live in, you know, Arizona or Utah or something like that. I've also noticed that trend taking place. But the frightening place about the thing I see noticing in the cities is that there really aren't building any more houses or apartments in the cities. But what they are building are condominiums in the cities. And they're not selling them cheap. They're very, very expensive. And matter of fact, I know someone that moved, that was like a school teacher for my son. They moved from the West Coast to Manhattan, paid, you know, a couple of $100,000 for a condo in Manhattan, but now they're saying it's worth, you know, about $2 million in a short span of about 3 years.
Wow.
So, I do not know. You know, I've never been to Manhattan. I've never seen Harlem. But like I said, poor people and old people are being removed from cities and inner cities at a very fast rate. And where they are moving is to the suburbs or to colder climates.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, very, very interesting points here. Another reminder, Neil Golden is the voice that you're hearing, and he is a stock chart reader, and he does it so wonderfully, and he explains it to us each and every week so beautifully. Frank McKay here with Neil Golden. And you know, another thing that you you're mentioning there, how quickly that real estate jumped, and you mentioned Harlem. Now Harlem, at one point, you know, I guess in the 70s and the 80s, you know, even part of the 90s, was a very depressed area. Folks had such a hard hard time with you know, getting the city to put any attention into it, and now all of a sudden it's become, I don't know what the word would be, but I mean, it's become a hot spot, and it's beautiful. I mean, there are, you know, spots in Harlem that were very, that were considered very high crime area. Now it's just beautiful, and it looks like just a thriving area. And you could say the same for parts of the Brooklyn. You could say parts of the Bronx. It really is moving, and the fact that somebody put a couple of hundred thousand dollars into something that is now, you know, $1 million or a couple of $1 million. That says something, and if it's worth that much, that means there's somebody out there willing to pay for it.
Yeah, and it also denotes that there's a lot of people. The supply and demand factor for housing in cities, it's very huge at this point, and it's growing, you know, every day. Most cities are large cities, you know, in the United States, because like I said, you know, people don't want to live in, or young people don't want to live in the suburbs. And the only attraction that I see that the suburbs have now is because if a young person wanted to buy a brand new house, because they don't want to buy an older one, if it's, you know, 50 years old, they'd have to put a lot of money into, you know, the plumbing and electricity and the foundation and all that. But if they wanted a new house, the only attraction in the suburbs is that's where they could go to buy one and have it reasonably priced. But on the other hand, the commuting would be a nightmare, you know, if they had to work in the city. And even in some cities where I live, you know, police, fire, and teachers cannot live anywhere near where they work because they can't afford it.
Very interesting. And again, I'll bring up Long Island. And again, it's one of the more expensive places to live in the country. Frank McKay here with Neil Golden, stock chart reader, and someone who each and every week gives us an interesting perspective on kind of where the money's going, and where the, not only the stock market, but what's happening outside and what's happening to our society because of it. But going back to Long Island, the trend here, now I'm 50 years old, and a lot of folks that are the generation ahead of me have already made their way down to Florida or to North Carolina, South Carolina, on the East Coast, but warmer climates. And along with those warmer climates are lesser taxes. The taxes here, the housing taxes on Long Island, are just tremendous. And everyone says it's school taxes. I don't know if that's known from where you are and you're looking at, you know, if you hear about Long Island, but our taxes are tremendous. I mean, I'm in a, you know, in a modest middle class home. And, you know, my taxes are $10,000, $10,000 a year for that. There are neighbors of mine who have a little fancier digs, and they're $20,000 a year. I mean, just think about those numbers. So when you go down to places like North Carolina, Neil, you'll see houses that dwarf mine have, you know, three times the amount of land, and the property taxes are $2,000. I mean, that's
oh my goodness!
Yeah, just tremendous. I don't know what they're like by you, but how do you explain it? Is it as simple as saying school taxes?
I do not know where the money has gone. It's surely not going to fixing the streets.
No,
or the sewer system.
No.
But you know, in my county that I live in, they are now having taxes when you buy property on the sewer system. And you know, I don't know if there is a electrical system. And the other thing, the electricity and gas can be hard to pay for, in a sense that some of these pipes were laid, you know, like 100 years ago. Now they're deteriorating, and the company doesn't know how to replace them. So, you know, they're just putting it on to the people that own the property. So the cost of owning property is more expensive than before. And also, they were mentioning something about foreigners coming in and finding our real estate to be very, very inexpensive. And so they have the cash, and they're willing to pay all cash for these houses. But in a sense, I'm told that now one country, like China, is trying to prevent people from taking cash out of their country at this point. So that's sort of slowing down. But back east, I hear things in Detroit that are happening. And even in Baltimore, rundown housing is very, very inexpensive. But if you want to buy it and put the money into it and develop it, you could have some very nice, you know, waterfront property. So, but at this point, I'm being told that the foreigners with the cash that are sort of not as many as they had, you know, maybe a year or two ago. So the prices seem to be slowing down in the sense that they're not rising as fast.
Very, very interesting. Frank McKay here with Neil Golden. We've got a couple moments left with the stock chart reader that we speak to once each and every week, and he's just so wonderful explaining all of this. Neil, in a couple moments, can you explain the star system to us?
Yeah, the star system was something originally invented in Hollywood, where they hire a star and pay him on a regular basis, and then the star would be making movies and make a lot of money, and they'd be famous, and everybody would be happy. But they no longer use the star system in the entertainment industry, in the sense that now if they find a star, you know, they may put him in a nice house, give him a car to drive, but actually he owns nothing, and as soon as he stops making records or movies, they can just kick him to the curb. Well, what has happened in the corporate world, you know, they were saying that like in the 1950s, if you owned a company and you were the owner, you were likely to make 20 times more than your average employee. Well, now that we have high tech, the owner or president of the company is likely to make 2,500% more than the average worker.
Wow.
And as you know, when it comes to bank, if you're one of the managers of the bank, whether you lose money or don't make any and you get fired, you get what they call the golden parachute, which is millions of dollars of severance pay with all kinds of benefits. So this is what has happened to corporate America, and it's something that I think maybe should be corrected.
I think a lot of people would agree with you.
Capitalism, you know, I'm not saying anything. I am all for capitalism, but this is somewhat in the abuse of it, and the shareholders end up getting cheated out of a lot of money that just ends up into the management's pocket.
Well, listen, I don't think you're going to find many people arguing with you other than the ones that get the golden parachutes.
Yeah, so in a sense, the star system is very, very much alive and working on Wall Street.
Wow.
Which, in some ways, maybe they deserve it. In some ways, they don't.
Just, great food for thought here always with Neil Golden. And, Neil, I just want to thank you for your input here. And good luck on the next week coming up on the stock market. I know you'll be watching it very closely.
Yeah, it should be interesting. Okay.
Neil Golden, everyone, is our special guest each and every week, and he explains the complex nature of the stock market in a very simple way. Neil Golden, once again, has been our guest, and look for him next week as well. And the week after, Frank McKay here with Neil Golden. We'll see you next time on Breaking It Down.